Good morning, everyone. Good to see you all here this morning. God has blessed us with another beautiful day where we can gather to worship Him. We can be reminded of Him, His power in our lives, and of His working. How many of y'all like that word on the board? Probably not all that much. Not one of our favorite words. I want to talk about an aspect of that this morning. And y'all can be thinking about what kind of sacrifice that the Bible specifically mentions in the New Testament that we are called to make. Okay, let's bow our heads for prayer. Thank you, God, for this day. Thank you for the beauty in nature that we can see and enjoy. Thank you that we are reminded that you are God. And I pray that we would be reminded again of the proper place that you desire to have in our lives. Thank you for the stories that you have preserved for us of things that have happened in the past. And thank you for the story that Brother Jordan shared with us. We can see your desire that your people would respond to you with proper respect. And so I pray that we would be able to do that. God, as we think about the word sacrifice, I pray that we could learn more and more to see the beauty in that word of what you want from us and what it really means. So I pray that you would guide us as we consider your word and what you have to say. Thank you again for so many blessings. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. All right. What kind of sacrifice does the Bible call us to make? Anyone? New Testament. Living. We are called to present our bodies. All right. Present our bodies. Actually, let's back up a little bit. What is the meaning of the word sacrifice? Can anyone tell me? Giving up. Yes. In the Old Testament, if we look at it in Old Testament context, it was killing of an animal. Killing an animal in honor of God. Okay, we'll do that. In honor of God. So that was Old Testament context. It wasn't always killing an animal. Sometimes it was bringing vegetables, oil, wine. There's a whole bunch of different offerings that were called for in the Old Testament. And so in that context, in all of those contexts, really, sacrifice is a surrendering. Surrendering of one's possessions. I don't know, something like that. I can't spell when people are watching. I guess y'all know that already. I don't need to tell you. Anyway, that represents the word possessions. Surrendering of one's possessions to God or to a deity. You know, there are lots of cultures that have various gods, but surrendering of one's possessions to God is what sacrifice is. And so Brother Josh mentioned we are to be living sacrifices. We are to be presenting our bodies. So there's one, our bodies. What's another one that the Bible mentions a type of sacrifice? Willing. Willing sacrifices, yes. We do it willingly, but there's a specific phrase that I'm looking for. There we go. Sacrifice of praise. So the sacrifice of praise. Okay. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 15 is a verse that I'd like to start with. And there it says, by him therefore, so there's something going on before this verse. By him, therefore, let us offer the sacrifice of praise to God continually. That is, the fruit of our lips, giving thanks to his name. And if we were to back up a few verses, and maybe we'll read some more a little bit later, it's talking about Jesus. And it says, by him, therefore, let us offer the sacrifice of praise to God continually. That is, the fruit of our lips, giving thanks to his name. The other evening, Wednesday evening, I was talking about what is a prayer warrior. And I was thinking about this later, and I realized that I believe thanksgiving is also a huge part of what a prayer warrior is to be doing. So key aspects of a prayer warrior that I went over is intercession, spiritual warfare, steadfast commitment, deep relationship with God, faith in God's power, servanthood and impact. And as I thought about those things later on, I thought about how praise and thanksgiving should also be a huge part of what a prayer warrior does. And I believe that as we do that, it really impacts the effectiveness of our prayer. If we look at the book of Psalms and the different ones that David and others wrote, just how often they are thanking the Lord. They might be, there's numerous Psalms where one end to the other is pretty much, woe is me, Lord, I need your help, deliver me, I need help, I need help, I need help. And then they switch and they burst into thanksgiving and thank God. And some psalms are just about all thanksgiving. And there's a lot of prayer there where God is sought for his help, for his protection, but also a lot of time spent praising God for who he is. And so the sacrifice of praise, I believe, impacts the effectiveness of our prayers. It allows awe and appreciation and blessings to flavor our view of God, our vision of God, our mindset of who God is. And so when we come to God with awe, with reverence, with appreciation, with a true understanding that that's where our blessings come from, then it changes our prayer. God, therefore, is seen and acknowledged as the source of goodness already received, as well as the able giver of needed supply, whatever our needs may be. And we all, most of us, appreciate thankfulness. Those of us who have children, we know how children can ask for things, ask for things, ask for things. And it's nice when you hear, thank you, Dad. Thank you for fill in the blank. We know that appreciation feels good. And in the same way, God is honored when we appreciate him. And our prayers, I believe, are more effective as we rejoice. As we rejoice in his goodness, as we acknowledge that goodness. And so I believe that the sacrifice of praise is very important for the prayer warrior. Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2 is, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God. Now that is giving our lives over to God's control so that he can working us, and he can show through us what he regards as good, right, and proper. It is interesting how I think so often we can be a lot like the people there that Jordan was reading about. We can go through life and, hey, we got stuff to do. We got to feed and house our family. And in our day-to-day focus, we can easily lose sight of what we should be doing for God. God can sort of be separated from everyday life. How many of y'all have read the book Lords of the Earth or Peace Child? Some of y'all are familiar with those books. And there are other books that talk about cultures in lands where missionaries have gone in there. And one of the things that it's always impresses me in those books is how worried they were about whether or not they are pleasing their gods. That filled up their minds. They had sacred spaces and sacred rituals, and they were absolutely convinced that if they didn't do things right, the gods wouldn't send the rain and the seasons wouldn't change. And, you know, they were absolutely convinced that the gods are paying attention to what they need to do, and it was absolutely necessary to please the gods so that they would be able to continue to survive. Now, in a way, that seems very strange, but I wonder if there isn't a lesson there that we could learn in our mindset about the Lord God, to live our lives with an awareness of Him and the fact that He is watching over us, and asking ourselves the question, am I pleasing God? Am I concerned about Him and what He has to say about me? And if we are to take that verse, those verses seriously there in Romans 12, presenting our bodies as a living sacrifice, then I believe that requires moment by moment consideration of God in all the choices that we make. Okay, I want to look at a story in the Old Testament, and just to start off here, how many or who can tell me the name of the prophet Samuel's mother? Anybody? What was her name? Hannah. Yeah. Everybody remembers that name. Does anyone remember the name of Hannah's husband's other wife who had all the children? Anyone remember her name? Yeah, something like that. Penina. Anyway, I'm going to call her Penny just to shorten it. That's easier to say. Not many people remember her name. But most people who are familiar with the story of Samuel remember his mother's name. And I want to look at that story in 1 Samuel. I like that name, Hannah. Maybe because one of my daughters is named Hannah, but it's a good, strong name. And there's no chance of spelling it backwards. I don't know if anybody ever thought of that or not. You can't, for you dicks, if there's any dyslexic people, you can't get that name spelled backwards. It means the same thing, or it says the same thing, going both ways. But 1 Samuel chapter 1, there's a story of Hannah and Samuel, Elkanah, her husband, and Penny, the other wife. Let's start in 1 Samuel chapter 1 and verse 2. It's talking about Elkanah. He had two wives. The name of the one was Hannah. The name of the other was Penny. And Penny had children, but Hannah had no children. And this man went up out of his city yearly to worship and to sacrifice unto the Lord of hosts in Shiloh. Shiloh was kind of the center of the universe for the children of Israel in those days. That's where the tabernacle was set up. That's where Eli the priest was. And they would go there This man went once a year, and it was at this time most everyone else went to sacrifice to the Lord. So this man went yearly to worship and to sacrifice. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, the priests of the Lord, were there. And when the time was that Elkanah offered, he gave to Penny his wife and to all her sons and daughters portions. But unto Hannah he gave a worthy portion, for he loved Hannah, but the Lord had shut up her womb. And so here, verse 4, his wife Penny, I don't know how many children she has. It says to all her sons and her daughters, he gave portions. But Hannah had no children. He especially loved Hannah. And most storytellers would say that she was his first wife, his first love. He especially loved her, but she had no children. Verse 6, her adversary also provoked her sore, for to make her fret, because the Lord had shut up her womb. I think that adversary was Penny. Penny was perhaps a bit of a petty person who liked to point out the fact over and over again, and especially as they were on this trip, it would seem, she liked to point out that it was wonderful, it was just really good that Elkanah had married a second wife, because now he actually had children, was something that Hannah wasn't able to produce. And in those times, it was seen as a curse. Childlessness was seen as a curse from God. And she probably pointed out that the Lord sure knew who to bless and who to curse. And we see the reaction here. Provoked her sore. So who knows what all remarks were made. And as he did so year by year, when she went up into the house of the Lord, so yearly, this was a yearly thing, she provoked Hannah, therefore she wept and did not eat. Then said Elkanah, her husband, to her, Hannah, why weepest thou? Why eatest thou not? And why is thy heart grieved? Am I not better to thee than 10 sons? I think most of you ladies who've been married for a while would agree with Hannah that sometimes your husbands just don't get it. And here Elkanah was saying, come on, what's the big deal? Am I not better to you than 10 sons? He didn't understand. But he was trying to. So we're going to give him some credit for that. We try, but we don't always get it. And verse 9, so Hannah rose up after they had eaten in Shiloh and after they had drunk. Now Eli the priest sat upon a seat by a post of the temple of the Lord. And she was in bitterness of soul and prayed unto the Lord and wept sore. She knew where to go. She knew where the source of blessing was in her life. And here she was. She's pleading with God. She's coming before the Lord, and she's in bitterness of soul. She's praying, and she vowed a vow and said, O Lord of hosts, if thou wilt indeed look on the affliction of thine handmaid and remember me, and not forget thine handmaid, but wilt give unto thine handmaid a man-child, then will I give him unto the Lord all the days of his life. There shall no razor come upon his head. And it came to pass, as she continued praying before the Lord, that Eli marked her mouth. Now Hannah, she spake in her heart, only her lips moved, but her voice was not heard. Therefore Eli thought she had been drunken. At that time, when people went to the temple to pray, prayers were said out loud. They were typically, not always, but typically memorized prayers that were chanted. They chanted psalms. They chanted just different memorized prayer, and they would pray aloud. And here Hannah is, her lips are moving, she had no sound coming, and Eli thought she had been drunken. Eli said unto her, how long wilt thou be drunken? Put away thy wine from thee. And Hannah answered and said, no, my lord, I am a woman of a sorrowful spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but have poured out my soul before the Lord. Count not thine handmaiden for a daughter of Belial, for out of the abundance of my complaint and grief have I spoken hitherto. Then Eli answered and said, go in peace, and the God of Israel grant thee thy petition that thou hast asked of him. And she said, let thine handmaiden find grace in thy sight. And so the woman went her way, did eat, and her countenance was no more sad after that interaction with God and the interaction with the priest, where the priest said, go in peace. He didn't know what she was praying for. She simply said that out of the anguish of her heart, she was praying. She was making a petition to God. And Eli said, go in peace. The Lord grant thee. She, so to speak, she went, she washed her face, she cheered up, and she sat down and she ate with everybody else. And before that, she had been so sick in heart that she wasn't able to eat. She prayed, she'd given it to the Lord, she'd received a blessing, and now she was moving on. As the story goes, we know what happened, that some time went by, and she bore a son. She had a son. She named his name Samuel. And verse 20, called his name Samuel, saying, because I have asked him of the Lord. And so for a number of years, Hannah stays home. She didn't go up to the temple or to the tabernacle in Shiloh with the rest of the family. But she requested of her husband that she could stay home until the child was weaned. And then I will bring him that he may appear before the Lord and there abide forever. Her expectation was, and they say that Samuel was around 5 years old when she finally went back to Shiloh. And at that point, this five-year-old boy that she had poured all of her mother heart into, she brought him to give him to the Lord. And that was a possession that she turned over to God as a sacrifice to give back to him. And that is one of the things about sacrifice that I'd like to look at a little bit. And also, if we look at Hannah's prayer and song, maybe a song of triumph, we could say, after she brought this child and gave him back to the Lord, turned him over to the service of Eli the priest, she sang a song, and that is a song of praise and honor to God, an acknowledgement of who God is and how God works. I'd like to read through at least some of it. Verse 1 of chapter 2, Hannah prayed and said, my heart rejoiceth in the Lord. Mine horn is exalted in the Lord. My mouth is enlarged over mine enemies, because I rejoice in thy salvation. There is none holy as the Lord, for there is none beside thee, neither is there any rock like our God. Talk no more so exceeding proudly. Let not arrogancy come out of your mouth. For the Lord is a God of knowledge, and by him actions are weighed. The bows of the mighty men are broken, and they that stumbled are girded with strength. They that were full have hired out themselves for bread, and they that were hungry ceased, so that the barren hath borne seven, and she that hath many children is waxed feeble. The Lord killeth and maketh alive. He bringeth down to the grave and bringeth up. The Lord maketh poor and maketh rich. He bringeth low and lifteth up. He raiseth up the poor out of the dust and lifteth up the beggar from the dunghill, to set them among princes and to make them inherit the throne of glory. For the pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and he has set the world upon them. He will keep the feet of his saints, and the wicked shall be silent in darkness. For by strength shall no man prevail. The adversaries of the Lord shall be broken to pieces. Out of heaven shall he thunder upon them. The Lord shall judge the ends of the earth, and he shall give strength unto his king and exalt the horn of his anointed. And so we see that Hannah, in her pouring out of praise, was acknowledging that God is a God over all, and he is the one who hears the prayers of the needy. And it is he who sets up, who gives life, who ends life. And on, She is acknowledging that God is a part of life. So Hannah is remembered along with her prayer of gratitude and worship, her triumph and joyful giving of her son to the Lord. That's what we remember about Samuel's mother. I believe that she joyfully gave over that son to serve the Lord. And Penny is largely forgotten. We don't know who her children were or what they did. She played a part in the story, but the villain, I suppose, in the story. So if we think about sacrifice, and here is where I would like to connect what Hannah did to what the New Testament tells us about giving the sacrifice of praise or surrendering of one's possessions to God. And the New Testament tells us to bring the sacrifice of praise. It also tells us to present our bodies a living sacrifice. Now, if we take a human level look at the idea of sacrificing animals in the Old Testament, it tells, they were told pretty clearly that they are to bring the best. The best of the cattle, the best of the sheep, the best of their vegetables. And on a human level, it's like, well, we're going to kill it and burn it. What a waste. Why can't we bring something that's not doing quite so well and kill and burn that? It's quite a loss to my herd to bring the absolute best animal, because animal husbandry, you know that the best and the healthiest animals produce the best offspring. But here God is saying, bring the best. I want the best. Do not bring me anything crippled or sick, but bring the best of the vegetables, the best of the wine, the best of the corn and wheat was asked for. And so on a human level, it's kind of easy to say, well, that's kind of a waste. We're just going to burn it up. We're just going to pour it out before on the altar or whatever. It's easy to look at that and say, that's doesn't make sense. But in order for sacrifice to make sense, is we have to understand who God is and the importance that he plays, the important role that he plays in our life. Because if we fail to see the fact that everything that we have and everything that is a part of our existence comes from God, and it depends on him, our life, our breath, our abilities, our crops. You know, most of us, how many of you all think that probably God is displeased with you and that's why your garden didn't do very good this year? Nobody. At one time, people would be questioning, are we doing something wrong? Because it hasn't rained hardly all summer long. But we just kind of go, whatever, it's a dry year. We don't say, hey, am I doing something wrong? At one time, and especially in some of these heathen cultures, that was a big thing. And actually, in fact, what Jordan read here in the book of Haggai, God was saying, you know why your crops aren't doing very good? It's because you're not putting the importance into me, into my house, that you should. And so to understand sacrifice right, we have to understand the importance of God in our lives. We have to understand that what we have has been given to us. And now I want to do what I can to improve my relationship with God, and I'm going to give back the best of what I have to him, because it's him. It's his to begin with. He has first given it to me. So understanding that what I have has been given to me from God, and now I am returning back to God, whatever best that I have, I'm going to surrender that which is mine, or we say it's mine. I'm going to give that back to God. But there's also another thing that I so often miss, have missed, and that is a part of sacrifice. And Old Testament sacrifice is those who saw it properly, they also saw it as moving things from just common things over into being sacred things because they now belong to God. So this animal, which is in reality just an animal, or these vegetables or whatever, they are a part of the physical. When I own them, when I have them, they are common things of life. But when I give them to God, they now have become sacred because they have been given to God. So sacrifice was also seen as moving the object from the common over to the sacred, and it was to be treated as such. How many of you, when someone calls you and says, hey, you know what? There's somebody who needs help, and on Saturday we want to get together. There's many people, and we're going to get together, and we're going to take care of this need. I know I don't very often, but in my mind, I should be saying, I'm going to do that because I want to do it for the Lord, and that time is God's time, and I'm going to treat it especially as something that belongs to God. And so we're moving something from the common over into the sacred and recognizing that that is God's. You know, being tempted to take that money that you know you should give to the Lord to buy those tires that you really need. But in our mind, we say, oh no, that's God's money. And that money is sacred. I want to give it to him for his purposes. So, and I believe that that was Hannah's heart when she took her son. When she raised her son and had him for those few years, she knew that she was going to give that son to God, and that son was going to be sacred for God's service. And as we present our bodies, are we willing to look at our bodies as belonging to God? And there's verses in, forgot to look it up, was it 1 Corinthians or 2 Corinthians, where it says, don't you know that your body is a temple of the living God, and whoso defiles that temple, him shall God destroy. And it is a reminder there that our bodies belong to God. And do we see our bodies that way? You know, are we going to abuse our bodies and mistreat our bodies? Shame on me, you know, when I fail to recognize that it belongs to God, and as such, I should view it and treat it as though it belongs to him. I forget that way too often. So as we give things to God, we move it from the common to the sacred, and we should treat it as such. So if we go back to Hebrews chapter 13, here he is talking about altars, meats, sacrifices. Verse 11 of Hebrews chapter 13, for the bodies of those beasts whose blood is brought into the sanctuary by the high priest for sin are burned without the camp. Therefore, wherefore, Jesus also, that he might sanctify the people with his own blood, suffered without the gate. Let us go forth, therefore, unto him without the camp, bearing his reproach. For here have we no continuing city, but we seek one to come. By him, therefore, by Jesus, by the fact that he has paid the price for us, he was the sacrifice so that we could find new life. By him, therefore, let us offer the sacrifice of praise to God continually. That is the fruit of our lips, giving thanks to his name. So because of Jesus, we are called to honor him, honor the Lord, and offer that sacrifice of praise. You know, I'm sometimes put to shame by people who claim they have no faith. I know a man like that, one of our customers, and He doesn't acknowledge God, but the other day he told me that he was looking for a new pickup, and he was sitting at the dealership, and the sales manager was saying, those pickups aren't available. Those pickups just aren't available. And as he's sitting there, she gets a fax saying that there were three of those pickups coming to that dealership. And he said, that's divine intervention. I used to not believe in it, but I do now. Divine intervention. And I thought to myself, wow, even those who claim to not believe in God, when they get something good, sometimes they actually acknowledge God. And I thought, you know what? I do that far too little, and that is to acknowledge God and to acknowledge His gifts. But unfortunately, some of those people as well, when something goes wrong, they often say, well, if there was a God, He wouldn't let that happen. And so it doesn't always necessarily work out any further in their lives. But it is interesting to see how when they receive a surprise, they sometimes acknowledge a higher power or acknowledge God. So for us, having experienced new life, having God's presence in our lives, our lips should very often give praise to our God and to the experience that we had and are having. So having experienced what? By Him, therefore, let us offer the sacrifice of praise. And so by Him, number one, having experienced, what is that which we have experienced? Redemption, number one, and supply. Supply of our needs, supply of our spiritual needs, supply of our physical needs. And so we take what God has supplied and we return it to Him. We praise Him. We honor Him with our time, with our money. We give of our possessions for the purpose of sharing the love of Jesus. So we have received supply and we return it to God. Remember, moving it from the common to the sacred and treating it as if it were God's possession, handling it as such. And for what purpose do we do that? I believe that as we do that, we grow closer in our relationship. I believe that the true heart of the Old Testament people of God was to grow closer to God, to understand His will and guidance. And I think that is to be our purpose as well, to grow closer to God, to seek to return to Him what is rightfully His, that is ourselves and our possessions, so that we can grow closer to Him in our relationship. Honor Him as the source. God delights in being honored for the blessings that we receive, and therefore we offer the sacrifice of praise. We share knowledge and available experience with others. That is a big thing of why God wants us to be offering the sacrifice of praise, is to share the knowledge that we have and to share available experience with those around us. Verse 16 there says, to do good and communicate, forget not. To do good and to communicate, forget not, for with such sacrifice God is well pleased. There are a few things in the New Testament that it specifically says, for with these things, for these certain things, God is well pleased. To do good and to communicate, that tells us God is pleased with that. In Hebrews chapter 11, the faith chapter, if we back up just a couple pages in verses 4 through 7, by faith Abel offered unto God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, by which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts, and by it he being dead yet speaketh. By faith Enoch was translated that he should not see death, and was not found because God had translated him. For before his translation he had this testimony that he pleased God. But without faith it is impossible to please him. For he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. By faith Noah, being warned of God of things not seen as yet, moved with fear, prepared an ark to the saving of his house, by the which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is by faith. So here it lists three men that their faith caused them to do something. So to do good and to communicate, forget not, for with such sacrifices, God is well pleased. I don't really know what Enoch did for a living. It just tells us that he walked with God, and it tells us here that he pleased God. So I don't know what else he did, but I have read a Bible timeline book, and it's surprising how lives overlapped. If you live 400, 500, 600, 700 years back then, so many lives overlapped. And Enoch lived during a time where there was actually a lot of evil going on. There was a lot of wickedness and corruption. And in that time, Enoch walked with God. And to the point where at one point, it seems like God said, I want him walking in heaven with me. And God took him. Abel, he offered unto God more excellent sacrifice than Cain. If we want to live our own lives and be in charge of our own lives, God lets us do that to a certain extent. But maybe things are dry. Things don't go well. And life is dry. And we may end up with a situation where, ever see the Bible story pictures of Cain and Abel? Abel's kneeling there by the altar, and smoke's going up. And Cain is over here kneeling by his altar, and his smoke is creeping on the ground. Maybe it feels like our life is like that. If we fail to give God his proper place and let him be in charge of our lives, but we're going to give something to him to try to make him happy. You know, I know I'm doing what I want to over here, but over here I'm gonna give some money, or I'm gonna give of my time. I want to make sure that God is pleased, so that it rains on my fields. We're still probably gonna feel like Cain there, where our smoke, so to speak, isn't connecting with God. And we're given these examples that show us that these men's faith resulted in them doing something. Noah especially, he was told to build a boat on dry ground in a place where it hadn't rained ever. And so Noah had faith. He believed God. He took him at his word, and he started building a boat. And this boat, I don't know, he was a preacher of righteousness for 100 years. And I assume he was building a boat most of that time. Well, people called him a fool. It's one thing to work on a project for a week and be told you're a fool. But to work on this project for 100 years, well, most people call you a fool. It takes a lot of faith. But Noah believed God and took God at his word. And what happened? He did what God told him to do. Is God that real in our lives? To do good and to communicate, where we acknowledge God the same way that these men did who are given to us as examples today. So a giving over of time, of money or time or effort, what Noah did there, that was a big deal. That was giving over of a lot of time and a lot of effort to build that. And so to do good and to communicate with such sacrifices, God is well pleased, that is giving of ourselves. And then seeing the giving of that as becoming sacred, as I give it over to the Lord. That could be setting aside money to give, the money you set aside to put in the offering, or the money you set aside to contribute toward prison letters, or ABT, the work that's going on that Joshua is doing in Chicago or working, preparing for. You know, money set aside for that. Once we set it aside, it is God's money. Serving needs, giving of our time, when we could be working or relaxing, to get those couple more hours in this week, get that project completed, or hanging out with my family. Surely that's important. But sometimes we give up some of that to go help others, to serve. Is that time, can we see that time as belonging to God and therefore being sacred? Conversations that consume time. You know, conversations with people can stop us from accomplishing a lot of things. But can we see those? You know what? I'm giving it to the Lord, and it's His time. Hands-on help, building, feeding, praying for others. As we think about being prayer warriors and what that entails and the time that it takes, does that become sacred? Are we doing it because of Him, by Him, therefore, by Jesus, by what He has done in our lives? Can we see that time spent praying for others as a sacrifice that we're giving to God? And as such, does it become sacred? There are two ways to see these things: money set aside, serving needs, conversation, hands-on help, praying for others. There's two ways of seeing these. And one is Penny's view. Penny's view is, I got it. I can do it. God has blessed me. And I have all of this. And it's a view of pride. I can do this. I can accomplish this. I have the skills. I'm the person that God has blessed. And so therefore, I can do great things. That's Penny's view. Hannah's view was that these things are gifts from God. I have received them. They're special to me because I see them as that. And I'm going to return it to Him because those things are sacred. They belong to Him. Hannah's view was that these things are a gift from God that I'm giving back to Him. What I have and what I own is a common thing, but now it is sacred because it belongs to God, and I view it as such. I believe Hannah's view, and if we have that view, with such things, God is well pleased. If it is seen as giving to God, if it is flowing out of our experience what we have received from God, we are now sharing it with others. And then Hebrews chapter 11, we must believe that He is. He that cometh to God must believe that He is, and that He is a rewarder of them that diligently seek Him. So we believe that God is. Things that happen are not just natural. The fact that, you know, as civilizations in the past would have said, we've had a dry summer, we probably displeased God. We need to figure out what we can do different. The things that happen in our lives, we so often can just look at it and say, well, it's what it is. Is this what happened? But can we look at them and ask ourselves, how is God involved? And how is my relationship with God affecting what is going on? So he that cometh to God must believe that He is. And out of that reality flows the true giving of the sacred sacrifice. And that, I believe, is the essence of Hannah's prayer and her glorying in what the gift that God has given. Understanding that God gives, God raises up, God lowers, God kills, He makes alive. All of those things that she says in that prayer, she's realizing that her ability to give that gift back to God has flowed out of what God has given her. And may we do the same as we think about life. We connect this back to being a prayer warrior. We connect it to being a part of God's family and the fact that we are called to offer the sacrifice of praise, and to realize that our words, some of us make lots of them, others not so much. But the words of praise that we speak to God, when they flow out of our experience, can go from being common things, words, to sacred as we offer them to God, as we offer our bodies, view that as God's temple, and as well belonging to Him and being sacred. So of our time and of our efforts, the same way, Let's allow our sacrifice to become a real sacrifice that God honors because of our relationship to Him. And may God guide us as we consider His word.